Our next kina is kina yud. For those keeping track, this is the first one we're skipping. We skipped tes. That usually gives a jolt of excitement to some people. We skipped one. We're up to kina yud. Kina yud is the history Kina is focused on the mishmaros, the various families of the kohanim. Eicha yoshva chavatzelas hasharon. That's a metaphor for the different mishpachot of the kohanim. And the history is such that, as probably many of you know, Shmuel HaNavi and David HaMelech created a system of 24 mishmaros so that the kohanim would rotate. Each one would be 2 weeks a year in the Beis HaMikdash working, and then the rest of the year they lived in places that are named in the kina. So you see already throughout the kina, you see various names of places. Beit Lechem is mentioned, Ayata Lo is mentioned, I'm not sure what that is, Mafsheta. If you look a little bit halfway down, you have the city of Yutpas, which is a city that Josephus mentioned, which is still a small city in the Galil today. These are various cities which were historically cities of Kohanim, and these are mentioned. And the names come from Bais Rishon, and they're all listed in the Divrei Hayamim Aleph in Perek Chav Dalid, and there are also names that are here some from Bais Sheni. So that's the structure of the kina. Of course, it begs the question: this is our first kina that's not directly dealing with the Beis Hamikdash itself, not far removed, but dealing with the Kohanim. Why all of a sudden are we mentioning or mourning or lamenting Dafka, the Kohanim? So there's different approaches we can take. I guess if you would summarize the approaches we've taken over the last 10 years, Yesh Darshan L'Shvach, Yesh Darshan L'Gnai. Sometimes we've emphasized the Mila of the Kohanim, but in other years, and I'd like to do that again this year, we've emphasized a certain indictment of the Kohanim. And that is based on the Gemara Masechta Tainis, one of the famous Gemaras about the Churban, where the Gemara describes as the flames were engulfing the Beis HaMikdash, the Pirchei Kahuna, even the youngest of the Kohanim, the ones who were still alive, went up to the roof of the Beis HaMikdash. They had the keys of the Beis HaMikdash. They threw it out to the heavens, to Hashem, basically saying, we have no use for this anymore. The Gemara describes miraculously some kind of a hand, the Pisas Yad, came down from the heavens and grabbed the keys. And at that moment, the Kohanim all jumped to their deaths in the fires below. Adkan, it's a Gemara, it's a Medrash. How do you understand this Medrash? So we've mentioned in the past that at the funeral of Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner, Rabbi Itzala was giving a hesped, and he quoted this Gemara, and he interpreted it as an indictment of the Kohanim. They gave up. They lost hope. They didn't have the resilience that was necessary, and they gave up. They threw away the keys, which is an idiom, even on our own idiomatic English, which is a form of giving up. They threw away the keys, and they jumped into the fire. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik quoted this story at the funeral for his brother. And the tradition he said he has from Rav Chaim Volozhiner's family is, if the Kohanim wouldn't have thrown away the keys, then Be'od Ma'at, the Beis HaMikdash, would have been rebuilt. But the Golus has been prolonged because they threw away the keys, they gave up. A Jew is not allowed to give up hope. And they gave up hope. They didn't have what it took. They didn't rebuild. I'd like to speak a little bit, in light of this, about the need to have resilience and the need to rebuild. And specifically, I'd like to speak about, as a way of hopefully inspiring ourselves, because each of us has our own difficulties in life, and we all need resilience, religiously, emotionally, etc., and hopefully none of us have anything like what I want to speak about, but from the extreme, hopefully we can learn from that. And that is, I want to share with you an incredible insight and story that I think makes it even more powerful, that I heard not that long ago on a, I think you can actually listen to the audio in other forums now, but originally I heard it on a recording from Zoom, that took place not that far from here, in the Michlala. Apparently, I don't know how many years this goes back, every year they have a special evening or a lecture or a Holocaust program in memory of Mrs. Rose Stark. And her daughters organized the program. I think one of the daughters works for Michlala. And they do, Rose Stark, the mother, Allah Shalom, was a Holocaust survivor. So the evening every year is about some aspect of the Holocaust. And this past year, they did a program all about the weddings of survivors. And towards the end of the program, they have a 15-minute interview, and you can see, if you're listening, if you're watching the Zoom, you can see him, by somebody who we've quoted in the past, somebody who I consider one of the great Rabbonim of our generation, Rav Aaron Lopiansky from Silver Spring. I don't exactly know how old he is, but he doesn't look that old, but he's actually the son of a survivor. And he tells the story, his father was much older when he gave birth to Aaron, his one brother, Rav Lopiansky, but he tells the personal story of his father and his mother and what it was like to go through the Holocaust and to get married, and he framed it with a beautiful pasuk in the Navi and a Medrash Chazal, which is quoted by Rashi. Take a look at source number 9. The pasuk in Yechezkel is prophesying the Churban, and there, in this discussion in pasuk Yudalid, where it's underlined, the pasuk seems to say something totally out of sync, totally random, totally almost a non sequitur. Who are some of the three people that are somehow in it? Of all people, anticipating the Churban, the Navi Yechezkel, who gets mentioned? Noach, Daniel, and Iov. They will be saved. And the gist of the pasuk in context is that they will be saved. They have enough zchuyos to be saved, but they didn't have enough zchuyos to hold off the impending Churban. So nish'elet ha-she'elah, the obvious question is, ma inyan shmita etz har Sinai? What do these three people have to do with each other, let alone, certainly when it comes to Noach and Iov, have to do with the Churban Beis HaMikdash? So Rav Lopiansky quoted a Medrash Tanchuma. I didn't find it in the Medrash, but I did multiple Bar Ilan searches. I could not find the language in the Medrash exactly the way he quoted it. But it's basically in Rashi, on the Pasuk. Rashi says in one of his interpretations, there are different interpretations in the Mefarshim, but one of the interpretations that Rashi brings for these three men, source number 10, Lefisha Elu Shlosha, Ra'u Shlosha Olamos. These are people who in the course of their lives saw three different worlds, as it were. And the most powerful one is with Noach. Noach Raha Olam Banui. He lived in a, we would consider it very primitive, but he lived in a built world in his day. Then he saw the world Charev. And then he saw the world rebuilt, Banui again. As if, it's the same land, so to speak, but it's basically three completely different experiences. Three different worlds. And Chazal, as quoted here by Rashi, go on to say that in their own way, Daniel and Iov did the same thing. Daniel, in his experience with the Churban, he initially was, on the highest of the high. Then he is in the Gov HaRayot, he's thrown to the lions. And then he survives to see the rebuilding of the next Beis HaMikdash. And Iov, in his personal life, Ra'as as Atzma, Meyushav, Charev, Umayushav. Says Rav Lopiansky, what is Chazal trying to tell us? What is the gist of this? Why is that something that's so special that brings together these three people and somehow is in the context of our theme today, which is the Churban? And he suggested, and I think this is really just the pashtus of the Medrash and of Rashi, but he said it so beautifully, that to go through destruction and to come out on the other end and to see that third world, to rebuild, is an unbelievably, unbelievably difficult thing. Each of these men saw the world b'vinyana, b'churbana, and then they rebuilt. And that is unbelievably difficult. It's harder to be a survivor than it is to be born into the tzara. They easily could have folded. They easily could have given up. And yet they rebuilt. And therefore, you might have thought, the pasuk is telling us, that these three people who had such zchus that they rebuilt, maybe they would have had the zchus to forestall the Churban. Kamash Malan, it wasn't enough even for that. It was enough to save themselves, so to speak, but it wasn't enough to save them. But what was miyuchad about these three people? They had a good life, they lost everything, and they didn't throw in the towel. I'm embarrassed. Until recently, I didn't think I knew this Rashi, even though many, many years ago I did learn on Yechezkel. But I have often made this point about Rabbi Akiva. Every time, I guess it's pretty much every year in one shir or another during Sfira, when I quote the Gemara in Yevamos or Rabbi Akiva and the 24,000 Talmidim, I always say autobiographically, if it would have been me, and I was Rabbi Akiva, after that happened, my whole legacy, all my Talmidim died, I had to be curled up on a ball, like a ball on the floor, and you would never see me again. I am not resilient enough for that. I would have been destroyed. But what does the Gemara say? Rabbi Akiva goes to the south and he rebuilds with the five Talmidim, the whole Tarsha Baal Peh, all of Judaism we have, is from that act of resilience. So that vort, that insight, I wouldn't call it a chiddush, but that understanding of who Rabbi Akiva was, Chazal are telling us that's also Noach, that's also Daniel, that's also Iov. So with that background in mind, Rabbi Lopiansky shared, and it was so powerful, I hope you will agree with me, I want to share with you the story of just one family, the Lopiansky family, what it means to be resilient, and to rebuild in an era, if it's true, as we've spoken about in the first two kinos, how hard it is for us to relate to the Churban HaBayis, hopefully, at least for the people of, at least most of the people in this room, and we'll be watching, we can at least relate to the Churban of Europe. We can at least relate to the Holocaust. I'm the grandchild of survivors. I remember my Bobby and Zadie. My Zadie had, you know, had the tattoo. Anyone who did survive, part of my mom's family, they're all survivors. All Ger Chasidim, all from Poland. So hopefully, even if you didn't have grandparents like that or parents, but if you're my age or older for sure, and hopefully even people still younger than me, have some connection still to the Holocaust. So I think this could be a very, very powerful experience for us. So I'll tell you a few of the highlights that Rabbi Lopiansky shared. The wedding of his parents, the marriage of his parents, which took place in America after the war, was an unlikely shidduch. His father was Litvish. His mother came from a Hasidic family. His dad was married before the war. And his first wife and two children were all killed. P.S., Rabbi Lopiansky said, until my father died, I didn't know he had a previous family. He never spoke about it. The mother was much younger, was not married before the war. Until Rav Aaron was 17 years old, in an offhanded comment, excuse me, this is before his father died, but he was, I think, in Eretz Yisrael at the time, and a relative, in an offhanded comment, mentioned, your father's first family. So he said he never heard his father ever discuss that. He said he, based on his knowledge of his father's personality, he's convinced that the reason his father never spoke about it was that he didn't want his mother, his wife at the time, and his current children, Rav Aaron and his older brother, to feel less than. So that he cut off. But what does it mean to be remarried? So in light of this Medrash and this Rashi, so he said, you have to understand, he says, after my father died, one of his friends called me over, and his friend filled in the story. He says, he told this young Rav Aaron Lopiansky at the time, he says, you have to understand, after the war, the single survivors rushed to get married. But those who were previously married, like your father, they were crushed. They lost their spouses, they lost their children. They were in no hurry to get married. He said, your father was not interested in getting married. He wavered. You can imagine as a child hearing this about your father? After all, this friend continues, your father said to me, he shared it with me, I was his best friend. Your dad said, what's the point? Your dad was 50 years old at the time of the end of the war. He was 50 as a survivor. What's the point? He had lived in Kovna before the war as a respected balabas. He had a business, he had a wife and children. If all that can be destroyed, if all that can be taken away, what's the point of starting over? He was a quiet, more introverted type of personality. He was an intellectual. He said he really had a havamina. He was going to find some farmland somewhere in upstate New York. He'd eke out a meager living that he didn't really need much at that age and at the end of his life. And he would just sit and have books and read and contemplate. That was his plan. He had no interest in getting remarried. He felt there would be a betrayal to his first family to have little children running around, to have another wife. How could he do that to his wife who was killed in the Holocaust? what happened after he survived. He was sent to a DP camp, Felderfink. And there, before eventually they all got sent to wherever they got sent, including primarily to America or Eretz Yisrael, they had various programs to help bring the survivors back to life. And there was a certain Yiddish writer who put on a play in the DP camp based on exactly this dilemma. And they're sitting in the audience, and the play, as it's being acted out, has a person who lost his wife in the camps. Now that's, no, literally a year or two before. This is actual news. And he decides to get married. He's going through the process, he's agonizing, and finally he gets married. And how does this Yiddish playwright so beautifully and so powerfully describe the experience? That at the second chuppah, after the first wife has been killed in the crematorium, the ghosts, the spirit of the wife and children who had died, they come to belava him to the chuppah. That's the play that he saw in Felderfink. They come to wish him mazel tov. As Rabbi Lopiansky is telling the story, he starts crying. And he said, the father turned, whose name was Ben Zion Lopiansky, he turned to his friend and said in Yiddish, Du herst? Du herst? Zwei will noch kommen und wish a mazel tov. They're going to come and wish me a mazel tov. And at that moment he decided his Havamina was wrong. He's going to get remarried. He came to the U.S. There was all sorts of delays. He came to the U.S. in 1950. And eventually he met Rav Lopiansky's mother, who was much younger and from a completely different family. Ad kedei kach, said Rav Lopiansky, that his father, who then is a single person, had a relationship. His Rav at the time was Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky in Brooklyn. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky wanted to push off the shidduch. He says, what, an older Litvisha ben Torah is going to be with a much younger woman from a Hasidic home whose family is no longer from? Nothing about the shidduch made sense. But he spoke a little bit more to Rav Lopiansky's father. He understood, he did a little more investigation, and then Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said, Tzagvura from Rav Tzion, Erel Boyin Viter. He wants to build. And Chanami, it's not an obvious shidduch, but it's coming from a place of Gvura. He wants to rebuild. And that they did. Rav Lopiansky emphasized throughout this little presentation how happy his childhood was. Does not sound like the most typical survivor's childhood. Because he actually spoke about the fact that other than not talking about his first wife and family, he was very open, he was very happy, he was emotionally stable, and he rebuilt his life physically and emotionally. And Rabbi Lopiansky ended this brief presentation by describing how he and his brother both had grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And how whenever there is the various family get-togethers and simchas, Rabbi Aaron Lopiansky said, I get up at every family simcha. And I tell all the children, the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren, remember where this came from. Someone had the courage and the strength to get up, to build and to rebuild. Not as an extension of Churban, but a real binyan. The courage to believe that after a Churban, there could be a binyan, again, despite what you experienced, is unbelievably difficult. If you start with Churban, there's natural hope. But if you started with Binyan and then there was Churban, there's natural Yish. And to overcome that and to rebuild, and all of us, in one form or another, if we're here, that means we're a product. If we have family who went through the Holocaust, in one form or another, we're a product of people who felt the need from a Gvura to rebuild. That's what the Kohanim didn't have. And that's what we're lamenting in this Kina. Echo yav shohachatzel sasharon v'damam ro mibin osei aron.